can survive if I let you.
Conquering nevermore.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh my God.
Greetings, ECW fans, and welcome to This Is Extreme, the ECW History Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for another great episode. We have a really cool interview today with longtime ECW ring announcer Bob Ortiz. Bob has lots of great stories. He was fun to talk to, such a great gentleman. And hopefully Bob will be on again in the future and we can talk some more with him. But I can't wait for you to hear this interview later in this show. Before we get there, let's take care of a few housekeeping items. Again, thank you for joining us. And whatever podcast platform you are using to listen to us, make sure you subscribe to us on there. If the option is available to you, please give us a rating and review. That helps us in those algorithms when people are listening to similar podcasts, whether it be an ECW podcast or another wrestling podcast, something that's similar to us. We come up in that suggested views area there on the platform. So that helps us with that word of mouth. It helps get us out there and in the eyes of some people that may not know we exist. You can also find us on social media. The podcast is on X, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look up ECW Pod. And you can follow me personally on X at The Dave Dynasty. And probably the best way that you can support the show is by going and buying a This Is Extreme shirt. You can go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt to buy one. The holiday season's upon us. If you have an ECW fan on your list, go buy them a shirt, right? They'll love it. And tell them all about the ECW podcast known as This Is Extreme. But buy a shirt, support us. A great, great way to financially support the show, right? Everything that we make goes right back into the show and paying the bills around here. So we appreciate that. Before we get to our interview, the main event of the show, I did want to talk really quick. On December 3rd in New Bedford, Massachusetts, Spike Dudley wrestled for Live Wrestling. This is his first match since 2015. And man, Spike looked great, right? He still looked like little Spike Dudley, still wrestled the same, still was in there, you know, doing all the Spike things, man. He was really, really great. And hopefully, if Spike wants it, hopefully, you know, this, you know, means that Spike will get out there and do a few more, whether it be a few matches here and there, whether it be some convention appearances, whatever it is, hopefully we see more of Spike. I know he's got a whole nother career, a whole nother life beyond wrestling, but hopefully he gets out there and does a few more things for us ECW fans so that we can still see him within the pro wrestling world. So again, great to see Spike Dudley back in a ring. First time in 8 years, man, that's mind blowing. That's mind boggling. But anyway, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have that interview with longtime ECW ring announcer Bob Ortiz, so stick around.
Be sure to follow This Is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback. So find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution. This is
Extreme. All right, everybody, and welcome back to This Is Extreme. And this episode, I am joined by ECW ring announcer Bob Ortiz. Bob, how are you?
Dave, great. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. You were a guy that I've been wanting to have on. And then when I talked to Todd Gordon, he said, hey, you got to have Bob on. And I said, well, of course I do. But let's start. I like to start everybody by asking, were you a fan of professional wrestling before you got involved?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I loved wrestling. When I dated my wife, she enjoyed wrestling. We used to go to the old Spectrum and see the matches there. And then we went to the Civic Center when the NWA came here.
Yeah.
So we were into wrestling. I never thought I would be involved in it, but I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. So you predate ECW, right? You were announcing with Joel Goodhart and Tri-State Wrestling. How did you come to be involved?
Yeah, this is a funny story. I manage an ice skating rink, and Joel wanted to run a show there. So he contacted Springfield Township, which is a Springfield ice skating rink. to run a show. Well, he wanted to run it in the wintertime. And of course, we have ice and we can't cover the floor, the ice, you know, like the big arenas do.
Yeah.
So I had to turn him down, but we became really good friends. It's funny, just from talking that first time, we really hit it off. So Tri-State was starting to grow, and he asked me if I'd want to ring announce. And I said, no, I never even thought about it. And I said, no, not really. And this was in the middle of the winter, so I was really busy at the ice rink.
Yeah.
So it's so funny when the rink is seasonal. So when the rink closed in April, he just happened to call me again. The timing was incredible. And he said, I have a lot of shows coming up during the summer. We're trying to grow. Would you reconsider? Because Joel was doing a lot of the ring announcing. He said, then I got to be in the back. I can't be out front.
Yeah.
So I said, I'll try it. So my first show was at it was Mike Schmidt's Sports Bar,
mm-hmm.
down at 8th. And I was so damn nervous, I didn't even know my own name. But I did it. I really liked it. Had a great camaraderie with the guys. And from that on, it was it. That was it. I worked for Joel, and then Todd and I started up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Joel ran for a while, obviously. And then kind of had the mishap with that last show with the Nature Boy versus Nature Boy thing he was setting up, right, where he had to cancel the show.
Right.
And that was kind of the end of the TWA. And
end of it, yeah.
Yeah. And you were one of the guys that reached out to Todd Gordon, right? You and Steve Truitt, Larry Winters. Reached out to Todd to continue on.
Yeah, I was good friends with the three of them. And of course, we knew Todd a little bit. Todd was kind of like behind the scenes with Joel. But the three of us were saying, we can't let this die. It's too much fun. It was such a neat experience. So we thought, let's try and talk Todd into it, because we knew Todd had Carver W. Reed. So Todd was the so-called money man.
Yep.
And because we didn't have money, you needed, I think it was $10,000 you had to put up for a license, collateral and stuff like that. And we couldn't do it. So we called Todd and we went to his office one day at lunchtime. And we said, if you wanted to foot the bill for the company, we'll do all the running. I said, I would do the ring announcing. And I did a little bit of the radio, as far as the website. Steve was our announcer as far as on the radio and all the music. And then of course Larry was a wrestler, so Larry was going to be the booker.
Yep.
So between the three of us, we figured we had everything covered. If Todd would put the money up.
Yeah.
And that's basically where it went. And we started it up, and that was it. That was the beginning of Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, and Eastern was a nice mix, right? Because you guys, Todd brought in some former WWE, WCW guys, the headline, but
right.
Then used a lot of local guys that he built underneath, and had a kind of good formula, and things were growing and building. So what? And then obviously he ended up bringing in Eddie Gilbert to book. What was it like when Eddie Gilbert came in and started booking Eastern?
Well, you know what, Eddie was a neat guy. Of course, now Eddie had a lot of demons, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And, I didn't know his history and all that. I got along great with Eddie. In fact, Eddie loved baseball. And I got to know the guys away from the building. And Eddie, we would take Eddie to dinner. We went to play ball a couple of times. I mean, we'd go hit him out. It was fun. I really liked Eddie a lot. And Eddie was fun to work with. And Eddie had brought that touch in from the South, stuff mm-hmm. that we hadn't done. And it worked pretty good. He brought his brother in, and he would bring some of the angles in that he worked with. And they really worked good in this area because they were new. And I thought Eddie was really good. I really did. I don't know what the exact falling out was with him and Todd. I know Todd was happy with him in the beginning, too. And then after a while, if you read Todd's book, Todd said there was a lot of drugs and stuff like that yeah. Eddie was involved with, and that part I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just knew Eddie as I knew him, and we had a good time together. I really missed Eddie when he left. And at the time, I didn't know why he left. I didn't know why he left until I read Todd's book, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, then, like you said, when he left, then it shifted to Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
How quickly could you tell the difference, right? Obviously, Paul brought in some different guys, right? Some New Yorkers to kind of mix in with the guys, but did you feel any difference in the locker room with the shows, kind of feeling with Paul booking?
Well, Paul was clever. There's no two ways about it. And of course, it became extreme at that point. You know, Eddie was extreme, but not like with the not Paul stuff.
Yeah.
And you could see the change. And then the locker room changed because Paul started bringing in a lot of his own guys.
Yeah.
And of course, our other guys resented it. So there was you could see the locker room changing from being, you know, one happy locker room that everybody looking over his shoulder. And of course, the TWA guys are all wondering, you know, when am I going to go? When am I next?
Yeah.
And basically, that's what happened. You know, most of them ended up going. So,
yeah,
that's the business, I guess. That's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Todd said in his book, right, there was some negotiating, right, on guys. Like you said, you know, Paul brought some guys from New York, but there were some guys that, you know, that Todd wanted to stick with and whatever else. And you were one of those guys. Right.
Yeah.
Todd said, you got to stay. Even though Paul really wanted you to go, do you have any idea why was Paul not keen on you announcing?
You know, I never got along with Paul. I never got along with Paul. And my reason, and this is just my opinion, is I was in the business. I was really enjoying it. And I wasn't going anywhere. I had two other jobs. So this was really a fun trip for me, where everybody else in that locker room wanted to go somewhere. We wanted to move up, move on. So I don't want to sound smart, but I wouldn't kiss Paul's behind.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't do anything for me, where everybody else did. That's just the nature of the business. And Paul and I never really had a good relationship. I really think for that business, that reason, because I never really buckled down to him. And that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
That's the best way I could describe it to you. That, you know, we just didn't have a friendship.
Yeah,
we worked good together, but there was never nothing really there.
Yeah, and like Todd talks about in his book, right, that he ended up finding out a lot of things about Paul after, right, that how Paul maneuvered certain things to get control. Do you think maybe some of it was because you had a pre-existing friendship and relationship with Todd that he was just trying to get rid of those?
I wasn't Paul's guy. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and I wasn't Paul's guy.
Yeah.
Where when Eddie Gilbert came in, it was just, I mean, he just worked with who we had.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, where Paul came in, he wanted to change everybody. And until this day, like I said, I've seen Paul like a couple of times and there's just nothing there. You know, we'll say hi and that's it, you know, only because, you know, we're not ignorant, but that's about it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody's discounting that, you know, Paul's a creative genius, right? He creatively is wild, but you know, business wise, maybe borderline ethic wise, morality wise, there's some questions.
Well, I'm putting Paul down because, like I said, he was the kind of person if he told you the time, you checked your watch.
That's right.
You know, but as far as creative genius, he is. There's no two ways about it. I would see him in that locker room, sitting down even before a show, and sometimes he would walk in there with not really knowing what he was going to do other than maybe the main event, and he would come up with stuff that was incredible. I mean, really, Paul is a genius. As much as we have no relationship, I have to be honest, Paul is a genius. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, that's wild. That's because that's what everybody says, right? Anybody, even anybody that Paul quote unquote screwed, right, who owed money or whatever else, they still say, hey, despite that, man, the guy had the mind, right? He was creative. I mean, and he got these guys that he owed money to and had these relationships to still go out there and put on these shows because he knew how to talk these guys into the ring.
That's what it was. Paul was, I'm being frank with you, Paul was a good liar.
Yeah, right.
Because he would come in and we knew he would die. We were dying. And he would say, hey, I just found somebody, or I'm just talking to somebody that's going to get involved with the company, put some good money into the company. And he was convincing.
Yeah.
And most of the guys went for it. I mean, that's why they kept working. That's why these guys kept working show after show, thinking we were going to get money. And that's basically what it is. Paul would just fake them through it. And with me, it didn't matter because I wasn't doing it for the money. I was just enjoying it.
Yep.
And in fact, whatever I got, see, this is something else where Paul isn't, I don't know. My wife and I, every show at the arena, she would buy a ton. We'd have a food table. She would buy a ton of food and out of her own money.
Yeah.
And she would buy apples and oranges. And we'd set up a whole table, Tootsie Rolls and Twizzlers. That was their favorite. You see wrestlers walking around with Twizzlers in their mouth before a show. It was funny. But the point I'm trying to make, if we spend $60, $70, $80 on the table, he never once thanked us. And we didn't do it for that reason. I did it for the guys.
Yeah.
But Paul just didn't give a damn. And that's the kind of person he was.
Yeah. Yeah. I always said that, you know, ECW, if they could have found a way to keep that balance of Paul's creative and Todd's business mind,
yes,
it could have, it lasted a lot longer than
yeah,
it did.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, because it was a great product. Let's face it. I mean, yeah, we were part of the wrestling history changing. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of changing, there's the infamous night that Shane Douglas won the NWA title and threw it down, proclaimed,
right.
You know, proclaimed, you know, Eastern was now Extreme.
Exactly.
What was that like from your mindset? Being there, you know, and all that, and that shift and that change.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is funny. Not many people know this. This is really funny because Todd, to this day, when we're talking about it, he'll say, and what a secret. Nobody knew a thing, and which was the truth. But before the show, Shane told me he was going to do it only mm-hmm. because he said, when I throw the belt down, there's going to be all kinds of confusion in the ring. Make sure you grab it. So I knew it was going to happen. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't know the whole theory behind them, what they were doing, but he just told me, be ready. I'm going to be throwing that belt down.
Yeah.
I want you to make sure you pick it up so it doesn't get damaged.
Yeah. And you heard it from Shane.
So and, I knew it was coming. But to answer your original question, the place there, you could hear a pin drop in the building. It was in the fans. It was incredible. They were all looking at each other, complete silence as to what just happened.
Yeah, it was wild, especially even Too Cold Scorpio. He didn't know what was going on. You know, he was the apron, you know, seemed very confused.
Yeah. Paul was good at keeping the secrets from the guy. In fact, when Paul would bring people in, you know, like when he different guys in from the WWE once in a while, we didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And he'd have them out in the car or outside, not even in the locker room. I remember the night Jerry Lawler came.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Rude, nobody had a clue.
Yep. Yeah, I always said that one of Paul's greatest strengths was he very quickly learned there were smart fans and learned how to work the smart fans.
Yes, yes.
And he kind of had his pulse on that the business was changing and learned ways to work the smart fans. And I think that's part of it.
Even worked his own guys. Even worked his wrestling.
Yeah, I think that was part of it, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they were just as shocked as, you know, when these guys came in the locker room.
Yeah. Yeah, and after, like I said, after the shift to Extreme, I mean, obviously things exploded really quickly after that. And really, ECW always seemed to have its finger on the pulse of society. And, you know, with as far as music and hipness and all these things, it always seemed like ECW is one step ahead, always knew where things were going. Could you kind of feel that in the shows?
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. It was incredible. Like I said, it was so much fun going to the shows, you know, going to work them. And the atmosphere in the locker room was really good. I mean, because we were at that point, we were, you know, looking pretty good. And like you said, you could see the future looked bright at the time.
Yeah.
And the locker room was great. It was a super locker room. We had a good time in that locker room. It was fun.
Yeah. In the locker room, everybody always talks about how, you know, everybody, it was like a very much a mom and pop type thing. Everybody pitched in, right? Taz helped with merchandise. Tommy was helping with, you know, some of the spot shows and different. Everybody was doing their part.
They were.
With different things.
Paul, before every show, it was, you know, like I said, I mean, I can't put down Paul for, you know, his wrestling mind at all. Before every show, I could picture him up on the steps. It was like a little balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And he would talk to us before the show. And he would say to us, he goes, we're only here because of the fans. He says, you got to give them all you got. And, I mean, everything was for the fans. And that's what we did. That's what we all did.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. There was a period of time there where it kind of looked like you're rolled back a little bit. And they started using Joel Gertner a little bit. What did you think of Joel?
I thought Joel's act was pretty good. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I liked Joel. It was, I mean, he had them. Joel was doing the Dudleys.
Yeah.
Joel was basically doing all the announcing for the Dudleys. I had no problem with that at all because it was a neat gimmick.
Yeah. Well, but when they brought him in, he was at first he was doing kind of the introduction for the luchadors and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Were their eyes on doing something with him further, like doing that heel thing later? Do you think that's why they had him dabbling in some of the ring announcing? I know he was bilingual and this and that, but do you know that was there thoughts of, okay, we'll have him do some of this ring announcing, which will lead to him becoming the ring announcer for the Dudleys and to that whole, you know, that whole shtick?
I never felt that or really, you know, thought of that. I just thought it because of the character he was. They were using him, you know, in the different spots like that. I never really thought about the ring announcer part.
Yeah, well, and then one point in 96, you kind of made this big return, right? And you came into the ring and Missy Hyatt kissed you, right? The Sandman had Missy Hyatt kiss you.
Yeah, what happened is I think I was gone for maybe about half a year,
uh-huh,
something like that. I had a lot going on with my – I worked two other jobs, and mm-hmm. I was really busy. And I had trouble making some of the shows. So Rocco, who was my timekeeper, he did a couple of the shows. And then Joel did some of them.
Uh-huh.
And then things worked out that, you know, I got back. I mean, I didn't actually quit. I just took a leave of absence, if that's a word I want to use. Yeah. And then when I came back, of course, they made an angle out of it.
Yeah. Did I mean, how were you aware of all that before going in? The Missy Hyatt kiss and all that?
I had no idea she was going to come out. No. No.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, no offense to Missy Hyatt, but you're obviously not the first guy in the business that she's kissed, but yeah, or the last.
I would just stand in back there and they said, Sandman's going to introduce you. Yeah. Do an angle with, who's going to cane Joel and bring you out. No, that's fine. And I didn't even want to do that. I just wanted to come out. I didn't want a whole fanfare. You know, it was no big, I'm just a ring announcer. But anyway, they did an angle, of course, and Missy came out. Well, she laid one on me, I'll tell you.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I know that's what you say, but you were part of the show, right? The fans knew you. The fans recognized you. You were part of that family. So you got a pop.
No doubt. It's funny now that I look back, because at the time, my main goal was to have a good time. And I always said to myself, I'm here to get the wrestlers over, not myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have, like, some of the ring announcers have their own website. They have their own this. They change their names. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was always Bob Ortiz, go out and have a good time. But I think the wrestlers really appreciated that. And they can see that's what I'm trying to do. And I had a great rapport with the wrestlers and the fans. I did.
Yeah, you were it's wild because you were – I think you were a kind of a throwback, right, to some of the old school announcers, that you were very professional, right? You seemed – to bring that professionalism to it, but then you kind of bridged into the, you know, it's wild because, like I said, the fans did, I don't know, for whatever reason, they gravitated to you. I guess you were just part, because there was this whole family.
Team, yeah. Well, I think the other team, the other reason too, especially the fans in Philadelphia, they were the hard fans.
Yeah.
And I'm the ring announcer, but I used to get my ass kicked. And I think they appreciated that. I mean, I got caned by Justin Credible. I got caned by the Sandman. 911 must have chokeslammed me 50 times, you know, in different buildings.
Yeah.
I took the 3D from the Dudleys. So I think when they saw that, you know, they're thinking, well, this guy, you know, I mean, he's one of us, you know, he's one of us.
Yeah. You were the extreme ring announcer. That's what they thought. Speaking of those fans, what were some of those front row guys like, right, that were there every show and became personas in their own right? You know, hat guy. And
yeah.
And then, of course, Mike Johnson was there and all these guys that. Hell, they developed personas of their own.
Oh, they were great. They were great. In fact, when I used to walk around the ring, you know, before the show would start, you know, they all, you know, want a high five and all that. I remember I used to knock the hat guy's hat onto the floor. And yeah, I mean, I had fun with all those guys.
Yeah.
I remember one show was really funny. We had the one group of people, we called them the bleacher bums, where I used to throw the hats. I threw the hats to each side of the ring.
Right.
So the one group of guys, they'd always throw the hat back. So I figured, okay, we're going to fix them. So, and if I lost it, I lost it, but I didn't. I put a $10 bill in the rim of the hat, my own money, and I threw it. And of course, the guy threw it back. So when I got it in the ring, I, you know, made a big thing out of it, and I pulled the $10 bill out. And of course, everybody started pointing at him, going, you effed up. You effed up. It was funny.
Oh, that's
funny.
That's what I'm saying. That crowd, that arena crowd was always, it was like the sixth man.
Oh my God! Yeah.
It you know, to the modern day, it was that transition to hey, the crowd's part of the show now.
Oh, no, it's about it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so you were, I mean, you pretty much stayed with ECW up till the end after that, right?
I mean, yeah,
you were...
the very last month I wasn't there. Well, a lot of the shows, they weren't here. They were on the road, and I couldn't make all the shows on the road because of my other my jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, so what...
When did you get involved with... I mean, were you there live, or...?
No, because I was always in the Midwest. But, okay. But I caught it pretty early on because I had a satellite dish, one of those big...
Oh, sure, yeah.
Those big monster satellite dishes, you know, that would move in the backyard.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I caught it at, whatever, 2 a.m., like some of the guys did. I was hooked instantly. Now, I did see them anytime they came through the Midwest and Indianapolis and in the area.
Right.
Else. But, yeah, no, I was too far to catch all the arena shows and everything.
Catch the arena. Yeah, it's a long way.
Yeah. That's a regret. I wish, you know, at some point I would have just made the trek to catch one. But, you know, you always think, when you're in the midst of this, you always think, hey, this is going to last forever. And you don't think.
Well, yeah, you did. Yeah, I thought that, too. I didn't, you know, see, from knowing Todd, I probably knew more than the average person knew as far as
right.
The money.
Right, yeah.
So I kind of knew at times we weren't in real good shape.
Yeah.
But like I said, Todd, I mean, Paul went on and on and on like we were finding other. I remember one time Paul told us all, he said, oh, I got a big meeting coming up with two guys. He goes, and they're probably going to buy the company. And we all, well, I didn't, but everybody else thought, oh, man, this is great. And I thought to myself, it's probably just another story, you know.
Yeah,
it was. But yeah, it's sad. It was sad the way you worked the guys and the way it ended.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the way you know, running a business that way where you're always kind of one step behind, you know, just fighting to stay afloat. That's not eventually it's going to catch up. And then and he did that, right? I mean, even you know, your ECW's on pay-per-view, but they're using pay-per-view money to bring you back out of the hole just to do the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, you're not really making the money. Like the pay-per-view usually, you know, lines some money in your pockets, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right. You're in the hole. And, you know, in a way, I guess it's tough because Paul's trying to make this thing work.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's doing what Joel did, Goodhart. That's why TWA folded.
Mm-hmm.
Joel would book these shows at the Civic Center. He would bring 6-7 guys in from the mid-states, fly them in, and, you know, we would draw well, but not enough to pay for that.
Yeah, right.
So he overbooked. Paul Joel overbooked. He converted two of the guys in and ran some good shows.
Yeah, it's remarkable, though, what Paul accomplished with this
concept. Yes.
I mean, you're talking, you know, pay-per-views and video games and action figures and everything else, and magazine and everything else that he maneuvered into and – and but it was everything was just to try to get the company back to square one and not ever to get ahead.
Yeah. If we could have found somebody like a Ted Turner or something, we'd still be running.
Yeah. Yeah. If they could just find, you know, just
one person who wanted to get involved. Yeah.
Yep. So what were your kind of your opinions on some of the rotating roster that seemed to trouble ECW there, especially in the late years where, you know, Paul was obviously losing guys to you know, WWE and WCW.
Yeah, right.
And then having to just kind of take guys he could get. And I'm not knocking these guys, right? Some of them were talented.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had to, you know, constantly – it's hard to do anything long-term when you're constantly having to try to fill gaps and create new characters and wrestlers.
He did a pretty good job when you really think about it. I mean, the shows were still – I don't remember, you know, ECW shows ever really, really being bad. He still had some, you know, neat stuff going on and – some, you know, good angles, but you're right. It wasn't like it was. But he got the most out of, let's put it, he got the most out of who he had.
Yeah, and it was remarkable because even guys like, well, you know, he'd lose a Sandman or a Raven or whatever it is, but then there was that point where they came back for a while, and then he would get that spike with that comeback. And, it was pretty well. And like I said, yeah, I'm not knocking any of these guys because, you know, these guys were talented in their own right. But some of them, you know, it's like, I think that, you know, sometimes you have to step up a little too, maybe a little quicker than what you should have, right? When you have a Raven that leaves and you're asking some guy to step up quick and you're like, oh, well, you know, we probably, we would have liked a few more months maybe to build this guy. And, but, you know, like I say, like you said, everybody stepped up though. Everybody, you know, worked hard and, you know, for the betterment of the company.
Well, you know, you said, you know, I was thinking like what you said when he lost Raven, he lost the Sandman and stuff like that. We know the business, so we know he's going to bring somebody in and it's certainly not going to be the same. But some of the fans that are just going down there just to see great wrestling action, if you know what I'm saying. They're going down, they're getting their money's worth, and I don't know if they're actually thinking that at the time. Well, you know, the talent's not as good, or this one's not doing. They're still enjoying themselves, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I very much think, Paul, it's kind of what the WWE is now, right? People aren't going to see the wrestlers. They're going to see the brand, the company.
Yeah.
And I think Paul did that, right? He built, hey, you're not going necessarily to see.
Right, you're going so to much see the ECW.
You're going to see ECW, and you know what that contains and what that show is going to be like, no matter who's on it.
You know, you're 100% right. I could see somebody saying to their buddy, hey, you want to go see ECW tonight? And the guy goes, oh, my God, yeah, let's go. And you're right. Yeah. They don't even know what they're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I saw several, you know, shows or whatever else ECW. And I saw right there at the end of the run, ECW show in Indianapolis. I had just so much fun. And I had no clue who was going to be on it. Now, this was the show where Taz made the surprise return to beat Mike Awesome, all this and that. So it ended up being a big thing.
Right.
But going into it, I didn't know who was on the necessarily who was going to be there, who wasn't going to be there. But it was, you know, it was ECW. I knew it was going to be fun.
Exactly. And you knew you were going to get your money's worth. That's absolutely. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was it like during that period when ECW was on TNN? I know you had a little more realistic view, but I know a lot of the guys got caught up in, oh, this is our savior. This is going to save the company.
But you know what? I guess even though I would talk to Todd and we kind of knew. I mean, even Todd at times thought that maybe Paul had something going on. I mean, he had everybody fooled, you know, because I remember Todd a couple of times that he and I would talk about it. And Todd would say, well, you know what? He actually is going to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess we were all strung along to a point and we thought the TNN thing would work good. We did.
Yeah. And it's funny, like in retrospect, we can look at it now and realize, hey, it wasn't the greatest deal with TNN.
No.
But Paul got it. I mean, you know, it was what was needed at that point to keep it alive a little longer. And you can say what you want about it. There was the opportunity for more people to see it on TNN.
Exactly.
It may have not been the greatest fit of stations for ECW, but it still reached a lot of households.
It's more people. Yeah, you're right. That's what you're trying to do.
And there's a lot of people out there who that TNN show, that's what they remember most from ECW, because that's what they got to see most. Not everybody got the hardcore TV show.
You would be surprised. And this just amazes me. You know, we're talking about the people that watch the ECW and that kind of thing. And I'm not putting myself over by no means, but I'm just, you know, in our conversation, you would be surprised even now, the people that will come up to me and recognize me. Yeah. I can't believe it. I'm floored. I have tickets to the Flyers and I'll go to the Flyers game and I'll be walking out or walking around and somebody will come over and say, oh my God, Bob Ortiz, and shake my hand. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, that was, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I've always said ECW was this wild mix of the old school, like territory type stuff. And then the modern stuff, because like back in the territories, right? These territories were like the home sports team, right? This was our wrestling.
Yes.
Well, while ECW was national or worldwide or whatever, it was still Philadelphia, right?
It was, to put it. Yes, it was. Yep.
And it even though, you know, a kid like me, you know, a guy like me from the Midwest, it was still ECW was important and I loved ECW. It was something different to those fans in Philadelphia. That was their home team, their home promotion. And they saw it, you know, born and raised. And it, you know, it was right up there with whatever, you know, the Eagles and the Phillies and everything else. It's like their home team.
Yeah, it was. And even that building that they called it, you know, the old bingo hall.
Yeah.
That was Philadelphia. That's crazy.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. And it's wild because everybody talks about, oh, that building, you know, you talk people from the outside like, oh, that building was horrible. And then people from the inside are like, oh, but it had character. it's like a different view.
it really did. It did.
That's a throwback. That I always say ECW was the perfect, the bridge from the old school to the new school. And it reshaped wrestling and the direction it took.
It definitely did. There's no two. Todd and I will talk sometimes and we'll say, well, it's over now. But without a doubt, I'll say to Todd, you definitely reshaped the whole wrestling world.
Yeah, because you had this you know, little promotion out of Philadelphia who the WWF and the WCW, the two biggest multi-million-dollar companies in the world, started to emulate.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's unreal when you say that. It's the truth. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there would have been no Attitude Era in the WWE without ECW.
Oh, it's crazy how you watch the matches now. And that, well, I haven't watched in a while, but I mean, you see stuff that we did.
Yeah, and you still hear the chants.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
It's absolutely crazy. And even, you know, these promotions now, they go to Philly and they bring in, you know, Rob Van Dam and Sabu and guys like that.
Yes. In Philly. Yeah. Yeah. They know what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like you said, I know you talked to Todd a lot, but when did you start to get that feeling there that the end was coming for ECW there towards the end?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I started getting, I remember we had a show in, Kingston Armory in Wilkes-Barre.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that particular show, nobody got paid. I mean, no one, not even me. And I used to get paid because I wasn't making that much.
Yeah.
at that point, and then the guys were starting to bitch, you know, and some of them were saying, my God, I haven't been paid the last three or four shows, which I wouldn't have known if they weren't saying it, you know.
Yeah.
And at that point, I started thinking to myself, we're really in trouble. And at that particular show, I thought we were going under, and it wasn't too far from when we did go under, but I had the feeling of gloom then.
Yeah, and it kind of had to be unique for you. Because obviously your life wasn't riding on ECW, right? You said
not at all. No.
You had work. This was more of a fun thing for you.
Like I said, we were buying food with the money I was making in Philly.
Yeah. Well, but what is it? What was it like with some of these guys that you became friends with? And you knew this was their livelihood.
Oh, I felt sorry for you. Yeah. I remember I was really close with the Shane Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Shane talking about how many pays he hadn't got. And, you know, they were starting to now at this point getting really pissed off. Like for a while they were saying, you know, well, they're going along with it, figuring, you know, it's coming or the good days are coming. But at this point they were really getting pissed off. They really were. And they were actually starting to hate Paul.
Yeah. It was getting
nasty at that point with a lot of the guys.
Yeah, it's funny when you watch some video footage of some documentaries, some reunion shows, different things right after the end. Even there were even certain guys at that point who were still saying, "Oh, I still think it'll come back. Yeah, I still think it'll." And it's like, you know, you have to feel bad because these guys, you always hear ECW's this island of misfit toys, right? These guys that couldn't quite catch with the big companies, but found their home in ECW and excelled, and that was taken away from them. That outlet was taken away from them.
That was their big thing. You're right. And I guess in their mind that they didn't want to believe it was going to, you know, end.
Yeah,
I mean, that was their livelihood, and I guess it's hard to tell some. It's like an athlete when they know they have to retire. It's so hard.
Yeah.
So you're telling these guys that, you know, you're gonna have to find other work, and then it wasn't easy finding other work.
Yeah. And you have these amazing guys like, you know, like Balls Mahoney, who's talented, but couldn't, you know, he wasn't a WWF kind of guy, but he had an action figure. No. And it was in a video game and everything else. And here, all of a sudden, that's taken away. And it's like, what do you do?
There was that certain, you know, niche with ECW where these angles and these guys worked, and someplace else that might not have. You're 100% right. Well, even Sabu, he didn't really last anywhere else.
Right. Yeah.
With the gimmick he had, which was incredible with us. But, you know, when you think about it, he didn't really last.
No. I mean, he had, you know, that a short run WWF. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
These guys aren't, I mean, and I'm not saying this in a negative light, but these aren't corporate type guys.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. So but we're just talking honest. We're being honest.
Yeah. And when they don't have that option to work in a non-corporate, you know, wrestling environment, it's like, what do you do? You're suddenly they're back doing, you know, these small shows in front of 20 people.
Well, you know, if you and I sat here, I mean, it would take too long, but we could go over every wrestler that worked on ECW. And then you think about a lot of them, where did they go after?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not that they didn't have the talent, but they just didn't fit into a certain program.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you take away X number of jobs, the opportunity, you know, you only have so many wrestlers. Right. You only have so many positions, and you take one company away and it reduces, you know, somebody's got to get cut. And
sure.
That's business. And it does stink. That's why it's always a good thing to say, you know, have options. Even if you don't like the product, it's good to have places for these guys to work and make a living.
Yeah.
So when you look back on ECW in your time, like you said, you were there more or less for the entire run in one way or another.
12, 14. How long was ECW? 14 years?
Something like that.
I was there for like 13 and a half. Yeah.
So when you look back on it overall, what do you think? What kind of memories come back to you, the overall view of it?
The camaraderie. The camaraderie with the excitement of being at the shows and sitting there at the table, being part of it. And then the camaraderie with the guys. My wife and I really got along with the guys. In fact, we used to have, it's just my wife and I, and we have a house here and we have an extra bedroom. And a lot of the guys, they would stay over. If they came into the city, they would stay with us instead of a hotel. And then we'd take them to the airport the next day. So we had a great camaraderie with the guys. And that's what I miss.
Yeah, that's what so many guys say, right? So many guys that were, number one, in wrestling, in ECW, and then the fans too. It's like that you feel like you're part of something.
Yes,
right?
Definitely.
It wasn't just wrestling. It wasn't just a company, right? It had a family feel and an us versus them mentality almost, and everybody got close. Even like I said earlier, the fans were close to the wrestlers, right? You had these guys that were there every single show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
But the fans were, remember when we would have the matches that were, the fans would bring the weapons.
Yeah.
And the wrestlers would use them. See, that's what had happened. You go someplace else that they won't even let them in the building.
Yep. Absolutely.
They come to ECW and they'd have something there in the first row, a cheat, some kind of a whatever. And the wrestlers would grab it and use them.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you still close with anybody from ECW?
Well, of course, obviously, Todd, uh-huh. Sandman off and on. I went to a WWE show, a while ago. And I was close to the Dudleys, people who were still there.
Yeah.
Actually, anybody that I see, I had a good relationship with. I just don't see a lot of them.
Yeah.
We took Tommy Dreamer and Francine to a Flyers hockey game because he's a big hockey fan. That's when he was with Francine. We did a lot with the guys away from the show.
Yeah. Do you ever get out there and do any appearances especially in Philly there or anything that comes up? Do anybody ever get contacted?
Yeah. I've done shows. I did ECWA a couple of times this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's not really a lot going on since the pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. After ECW, there was a lot. I probably did maybe three or four or five, maybe a year for different promotions, and then all of a sudden the pandemic hit and there's nothing.
Yeah. I think the world's still kind of trying to catch up and adjust back from that.
I did ECWA. I did two shows this year for them, but they have their own ring announcer, but they were having like a special anniversary show and they asked me if I would do it, and it was fun.
A
lot of the guys I knew and a lot of the guys I didn't know. In fact, John Finnegan works with them now.
Yep, that's what I was going to say.
Nice working with John. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I just talked to John, and that's what he said. All he does is ECWA, and he just does it to get out there and be a part and have some fun. And
John's so funny. We were in the ring for a match, and one of their heels comes in. He's coming up in the ring, and he's got a big coat on and a robe. And so anyway, he comes up to the ropes, and he looks at me, and he points for me to lift the rope for him. So you get in. So of course I went over and I did it. So when I came back to John, he goes, "Doesn't he know who you are?" that's the fun you have in the ring,
Yeah, yeah. And on a side, let's talk on a side note just for a moment. We've mentioned baseball a few times, but I think you got to be the biggest hockey fan I've ever met.
Yeah,
and,
I am. Yeah.
And I don't even know if fan quite encompasses. I was I noticed some things. I prior to this, I read up. How long have you been a season ticket holder for the Flyers?
I got them in grade school, 52 years.
Unreal.
52 years, and when I met my wife, our first date was a Flyers game.
So she just passionate?
I don't know what it is. I just love hockey. I love hockey. I manage an ice skating rink. I referee the games at the ice rink, or a lot of the games at the ice rink.
Yeah.
And, it's part of my life. I had to mix it in with ECW, the two of them, because I didn't miss either one. And
I mean, I was reading, it says that you've played pickup games with former NHL players and skated with a lot of Flyers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of the Flyers when they a lot of the Flyers were in this area, stayed in this area. So when they retired from the Flyers, they all wanted to keep playing.
Uh-huh.
So we used to, they all would come to the Springfield ice rink. When we, it's funny because people would go to church. We never rented ice on Sundays. No one would come. Now that doesn't matter. But we had to open ice on Sunday mornings from, you know, like 8 o'clock till like one. So all the ex-Flyers would come. And I'd grab a couple of the guys from my staff and we'd choose up sides and we'd play. We had a ball and they were good.
That's but incredible. Yeah,
we did that. Oh my God. Every Sunday for maybe 3 or 4 years. And then we had to start renting the ice. People started wanting to rent the ice and that's the business, to rent the ice.
Right.
So, yeah. But oh yeah, we've done all Schultz, Selesky, Watson brothers, Van Imp, St. Croix was a goalie. Yeah, I mean all of them.
Yeah, are you a memorabilia guy at all? You collect any pucks or signatures or?
You know what? This is really funny. This really is. I'm not. With all the wrestling I did, would you believe I may have 15 pictures? I always felt that, you know, why bore them?
Yeah.
You know, can I have a picture with you? That's no. I don't. In fact, I think sometimes people don't even think I did it. I know pictures, you know. But it's crazy. I was never really into the memorabilia of it.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing we did do, this is funny, memorabilia.
Uh-huh.
My wife was crazy over Don Maronko. Oh my God.
Yeah.
She loved him.
Yeah.
So anyway, we made one of these. They used to have those, I don't know, the dolls that you, that they put in an oven and they baked them like, I don't know what they're made out of, like a ceramic.
Yeah. Okay.
You could buy them. Okay. Yeah. So they had a wrestler ceramic doll. So anyway, we bought it and she put a little wig on it. I'm real good with painting and art and made it look like Don. He was the Intercontinental Championship belt at the time. We put the trunks on him. Trunks had the lightning bolts on the back. So anyway, we went to a show at the Spectrum. She had it in a box and we went to show at the Spectrum and we gave it to a guard. And we said, give this to Don Maronko, please. At that point, we didn't even know he was going to see it. You know, that was the end of it. Would you believe we got a letter in the mail from his wife about 2 months later?
No kidding.
Come to their house up in North Jersey. And it was the beginning of a great friendship. It was incredible.
Yeah. So
incredible. So
did she enjoy Don's time in early Eastern?
Oh yeah, yeah, it was great. And what when Don was in this area, he would stay with us. If he was, he was still with WWE.
Uh-huh.
If he was wrestling, say like in Washington and Baltimore, rather than go back to Jersey, he would stay with us.
Oh yeah.
So our upstairs room we called Don's room. It was fun. It was really nice. So in fact, I still talk to him. He's in Hawaii now.
Yeah.
I still talk to him off and on though. But that was fun. That's
awesome.
And then we had him at the ice skating rink for a personal appearance.
Very cool. That's right. Yeah, I always liked Don Maronko. I always thought they missed the boat. I always thought Don way back should have had a run with the title.
Oh, he was a great on interviews. Oh my God.
Yeah. I always thought either Don or Greg Valentine would have been the guy to beat Bob Backlund. And it never happened. But
no.
Well,
it's great when you talk to Don, and he does some podcasts too, and he just tells it like it is. He, you know, that's what they decided, and that's what they did. And Don was the kind of guy that was just kind of happy.
Yep.
With what they did, making his money, doing his thing.
Yeah. Well, he had a great career.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Oh yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks, Bob, for coming on. Like I said, I know we've been trying to nail this down, and you were a guy that I wanted to have, and a guy that Todd said, you know, said, I got to have, and
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to you. It's
great
talking about the old times, you know.
It is, yeah. That's what people like to hear, right? They like to hear everybody's stories and everybody's take and everything else. Because you could have, you know, whatever, 20 guys in the same position in the same place, but everybody's got different opinions, right? Different experiences. So it's cool to hear everybody's. And I like to cover different guys, right? You know, referees and I've had Matt Radico with the cameraman.
When you talk to John, I don't want to interrupt you, but did you talk about the night they went through the ring?
Oh, no. Taz and Bam Bam? No, yeah. We didn't.
Taz
we didn't
and get Bigelow.
Into, yeah, yeah. No, we didn't get into that because we didn't get to a lot of specifics about matches and shows yet. We talked for 40 minutes just on on generalities almost.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to have him back.
His expression when that happened was incredible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, I played. He's going to come back on, and we're going to talk more specific stuff. That'll be definitely something that we key on.
Yeah, ask him about that.
Yeah, definitely will. All right. Well, Bob, again, thanks for coming on and talking to us.
My
appreciate
pleasure.
Your time.
I'd like to talk to you again. It was really nice. Okay, thank you.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECWpodshirt and buy yours today.
All right, welcome back to This Is Extreme. Special thanks to Bob Ortiz for coming on and speaking with me, doing that interview. Again, hopefully we can have Bob on again in the future. It was a genuine honor and pleasure to speak with him, and I think he's got a lot more stories to tell, so hopefully we get to talk to him again in the future. Just a quick reminder, make sure you subscribe to us on whatever platform that you choose to listen to podcasts on. Follow us on social media. I gave you all those instructions earlier, so just go out there and find us. We have another really cool episode coming up in 2 weeks. This one will be with Michael Archer, who was an executive within Acclaim video games back in the day and had a huge hand in the production on the Acclaim side of the ECW video games. He's got a lot of knowledge about working with ECW, working with Paul Heyman, working with Tommy Dreamer, some of the events they did to promote the video game, the development of the video games, some of the promotion side of it, any promotional materials, and different things. Michael was a huge wrestling fan, actually attended a wrestling school, later worked for WWE on some of the promotion of their video games. It is a great, great interview, and it really gives you some of the inner workings of the video game business side of working with ECW to produce the two ECW video games. As you may know, if you go back in the archives, way back, I had a video games part one with the Extreme Gamer, who is on Instagram and is a big fan, a huge fan of ECW, a big fan of the ECW video games. And we talked to him about the fan side of it, right? And what it's like collecting stuff and being a fan of these games and what the games mean to him and his life. And he is the perennial expert on the merchandising side and what is out there and all the stuff that is available, the ads, the gaming guides, all the magazine articles, all that kind of stuff. So if you go back, you can listen to that. That's part one. That gives you that side of the ECW video games. In 2 weeks, we have Michael Archer on, which will give you the other side, the business side, right? The side from Acclaim and producing those games. So it's very, very cool. It was really an honor to talk to Michael. And I think it's going to be a really intriguing, interesting interview for ECW fans and for fans of the video game industry and what it's like and what is involved and so on. And some of the behind the scenes involved in putting out a wrestling game, right? I don't go into like logistics of the programming or the developing of the game itself, but with what it's like working with talent, what it's like working with the company, what it's like balancing different things, the rights to the music and all these things and the give and take of what your expectations are for the game you want to put out to what you actually get to put out, right? You can't get everything, so there has to be some balance. And plus, Michael has a lot of cool stories about just working with the talent, working with the company, some events out there promoting these games. It was a really cool segment of his life and his career that he looks back on very fondly. Was a great interview. So anyway, that interview is coming in 2 weeks, and I know you're going to love it. But until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.